Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Turning Towards Life. This is Lizzie and Justin here again on Sunday morning, broadcasting from London, and as ever, live and unrehearsed, us coming to you from our homes. This week we have a source, as we always do, which is a kind of springboard from which the conversation happens. And Justin has brought this wonderful source for us from the Marcus Aurelius Meditations, which I'm really excited to get into. Another thing that happens for me, Justin, when you bring the kind of sources that you often bring, is like I can feel new territories coming, you know, just by in the reading of it. So I really appreciate the kind of sources you're bringing, and this one particularly, with the kind of the edge of myself I can feel when I'm reading it. So I'm really grateful, and grateful to be here with everyone who's listening as well. And as usual, please feel free to participate in the conversation, either on Facebook or on Instagram. And it's just lovely to be stepping into the kind of regularity again. I always feel supported just by the regularness of this and the practice of it. So thank you.
Good morning, Lizzie, and morning, everyone. I always say that I'm pleased to be here, and it's true. It's always true. And I love the idea of sources, by the way. You know, you're talking about what happens for you sometimes when I bring a source, Lizzie, that's sort of off to one side of your own reading or experience in some way. And I have exactly the same experience when you bring sources. And then this work of having the source come alive between us, and being in dialogue with one another and with the source and with the person who wrote the source, whether we know them or not, whether they're alive or dead. There's a sort of multi-way dialogue in which new interpretations and new meanings and new understanding come through, and we come through in new ways because we're with one another and we're with this piece of text as well. It's incredibly alive. Yeah. And I wanted to say that because, although we haven't announced it officially and we're about to, you and I, Lizzie, have a Turning Towards Life plan to make this way of engaging with sources more available to people, and having people come and join us and join in some live events coming up. First one of which will be next month from the time that we're recording this, so April 2021, and we'll post the details very shortly. It's such a life-giving practice to be in relationship with one another and with words and with everything that comes with the words. And this source, which I'm just reaching for here on my own computer, because I seem to have turned away from it instead of turning towards it, I've just found it. So this is Marcus Aurelius, and I have kind of fallen in love with Marcus Aurelius's work. And to me, it's kind of astonishing. I don't know why it should be astonishing, because he was a human just like all of us were, but he did his work a really long time ago, like in a world that must be in so many ways so different culturally, experientially from ours, in the second century. And yet, of course, because he's a human and deals with human things, he feels like he's writing often directly to me and directly to us. And he lived such a different life, Lizzie, from you and me, because he was a Roman emperor. So like, if I think about the whole orbit of his life and the kind of things he must have got up to and the kind of power he had and all of that, it's so different. And right in the heart of it, something so kind and provocative and helpful. Mm. So this is from his very short book of Meditations. And it begins like this. What is it in ourselves that we should prize? Not just transpiration, even plants do that. Or respiration, even beasts and wild animals breathe. Or being struck by passing thoughts. Or jerked like a puppet by your own impulses. Or moving in herds. Or eating and relieving yourself afterwards. Then what is to be prized? An audience clapping? No more than a clacking of their tongues, which is all that public praise amounts to, a clacking of tongues. So we throw out other people's recognition. What's left for us to prize? I think it's this: to do and not do what we were designed for. That's the goal of all trades, all arts, and what each of them aims at, that the thing they create should do what it was designed to do. The nurseryman who cares for the vines, the horse trainer, the dog breeder, this is what they aim at. And teaching and education, what else are they trying to accomplish? So that's what we should prize. Hold on to that, and you won't be tempted to aim at anything else. And if you can't stop prizing a lot of other things, then you'll never be free. Free, independent, imperturbable. Because you'll always be envious and jealous, afraid that people might come and take it all away from you. Plotting against those who have them, those things you prize. People who need those things are bound to be a mess and bound to take out their frustration on the gods. Whereas to respect your own mind, to prize it, will leave you satisfied with your own self, well integrated into your community and in tune with the gods as well, embracing what they allot you and what they ordain.
What is it in ourselves that we should prize? Not just transpiration, even plants do that, or respiration, even beasts and wild animals breathe, or being struck by passing thoughts, or jerked like a puppet by your own impulses, or moving in herds, or eating and relieving yourself afterwards. Then what is to be prized? An audience clapping? No. No more than the clacking of their tongues, which is all that public praise amounts to, a clacking of tongues. So we throw out other people's recognition. What's left for us to prize? I think it is this: to do and not do what we were designed for. That's the goal of all trades, all arts, and what each of them aims at, that the thing they create should do what it was designed to do. The nurseryman who cares for the vines, the horse trainer, the dog breeder, that is what they aim at. And teaching and education, what else are they trying to accomplish? So that's what we should prize. Hold on to that, and you won't be tempted to aim at anything else. And if you can't stop prizing a lot of other things, then you'll never be free, free, independent, imperturbable, because you'll always be envious and jealous, afraid that people might come and take it all away from you, plotting against those who have them, those things you prize. People who need those things are bound to be a mess and bound to take out their frustration on the gods. Whereas to respect your own mind, to prize it, will leave you satisfied with your own self, well integrated into your community and in tune with the gods as well, embracing what they allot you and what they ordain.
So the thing, one of the reasons I brought this was the feeling of settling that I had when reading it. Mm-hmm. One of the things I know about myself, Lizzie, is that I'm interested in lots of things. And very often I can see so many different paths that my life could take. And there are always a lot that they could take, like where I might place my attention, who I might be with, what I might read, what I might do with my work. And what I love about this writing here is the idea that there really is something worth aiming at. Mm-hmm. I think if Marcus Aurelius was saying just be okay where you are and don't aim at anything, I'd have a trouble with it, because there's so much in our lives. There are injustices, for example, where somebody's exercising unhealthy power over us and we're stuck somewhere we shouldn't be. There are all of those kind of circumstances. And he's not saying that, I think. I think he's saying there is a something that we're here for, and if we can find it, if we can pay enough attention to ourselves that we can find what of us has our lives be coherent, what has us express our unique capacities, what it is that seems like it's ours to do, that is really worth aiming at. And that many of the other things that we go, look at me, how fantastic I am. Or more importantly, we go, look at that person over there, how fantastic she is or he is. I have to be that way. They're such traps, because they take us very, very far away from ourselves. and they open us to this this perpetual state of the thing at the end. Actually, for me, is really impactful that this risk of always being just looking for it, envious and jealous that people might come and take it all away from you.
Mm.
Somehow, I think that's the premise upon which we've built a lot of our culture is I have to get something which is going to involve taking away from someone else, and I have to always be fearful that they're going to come and take it away from me. And the culture of sort of in the social media world of fame and likes and all of that, mm-hmm. I'm always at risk if I go that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I can feel in myself, Lizzie, how that for very long periods of my own life has felt like I've lived right in the heart of that, what he calls envious and jealous, and I would call being afraid.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they amount to the same thing, but because somehow everything that I'm up to is I've got to live a fiction of some kind, and because I'm living a fiction, it's always available to be taken from me.
Mm-hmm.
So he leaves me with this question of how do we find out, like I really want to know, how do we find out that my thing to do is to be the dog breeder or mm-hmm. the writer or the person who loves other people deeply. I don't think these are all professions that they have to be, you know, or that how do I find that out? And it has something to do with when we find, at least for me, when I find myself momentarily freed of all of this churning.
Mm.
And I'm quiet enough. And then very often I have a glimpse. In fact, these days I feel like I've got a very strong glimpse, a very strong sense of it. But those are where the glimpses have come. And so, last thing to say is it points me into paying lots of attention to my own emotional state and treating it like it matters, like there's information in it for me.
Yeah.
My own emotional and bodily state tells me a lot, if I'll pay attention to it, about the kind of life that I'm living and about how the way I'm living meets this unique, strange configuration of a person that I happen to be.
Or the way that it's not meeting it. Like, both of those things. Yeah, I really hear you, and it's kind of pointing me to this thing that I realized a while ago, which was that I needed to sit down and ask myself what it was like to be me. And often it's like my way into the things that I find hard as well. So I often ask myself, what's it like to be me now? Like, what's this one? Because so much of my orientation has been like focused on the world. And just sitting quietly and getting interested in myself has been like revelatory to me, because I'm just not that way kind of inclined, if you like, or all my background and the culture that I've been in hasn't directed me there very readily. And so what I really appreciate about this source and what you're saying is that there is a way for us to be respectful of ourselves, respectful of this one, as if this one is filled with information that can really help us, you know, rather than the narrative I think that's so easy to pick up is, you know, something wrong with me. You know, you mentioned social media, and I've been wondering about that in the last few days, actually, what the impact of having so many opinions that I don't even know who they are, but they come at me and liberally, and as if no relationship is required for you to talk to me about me, and how huge that is for a human being to be able to take that level when, you know, in normal history, there would have been, you know, a few people who got the right to have an opinion about you and to be a source of envy. But now there's like the whole world can be a source of envy because of the way that the internet works and social media and everything. And I've been reflecting on the impact of that on a human life and what that really means. And so this invitation is really meaningful now, because it's asking us, you know, even in those times, this was a tricky thing, let alone in these times, to respect this one and to, as you say, feel into what brings us to our creativity, to our flow, to our comfortableness with being me. What are those things that I'm doing, participating in? Who am I with when I feel that? And I know that the other side of it is so enlightening for me too. Like, there are certain times I come out of things and my body is like shaking, and I didn't even know that that was going on in the thing. And I get out and I think, my gosh, look at myself. Look. So then I say, what is it like to be me right now? And I feel traumatized, you know, not by anything particularly even traumatic, but things that just don't align with me, fit with my life, and seem like a worthy expenditure of my voice and my life force. And so then I get to wonder about that and go, well, so what experiences produce that and what don't? And who am I with, and what am I up to, and where am I? And so I really am kind of, I feel very affirmed and invited into what it means to be free and, you know, independent in the deepest possible way. That doesn't mean I'm separate, but that I have autonomy and I have authority about my life. Like, I'm an author of this life. I'm not a participant in some random something, but that I have this. To have a human life means to have some power and decision-making capacity and choices to be made. And I really know this for myself as well, having wondered about this for a long time around jealousy and envy and other people's lives and, you know, the grass is greener kind of thing. You know, wherever I am isn't good enough, because there's always something else that I can fantasize about that's better than here. And realizing how absolutely futile that is. Like, it's never got me anywhere good. It really hasn't. And so to try and put that down as, you know, I think this writing shows us, you know, oh, we're going to put the audience capping down, we're going to put this down and other people's opinions down, and then what are we left with? I think is such an important process for us all to go through, and to accept that there are things that we are made for and things that we are not made for. And what am I made for and what am I not made for? It's such a great question. And it might not be easily answerable, and it might be an ongoing question, but it's very much worth asking and wondering about what the answer might be at any given point. As not as if there's like a fixed something, but as a guidance system, like as a feeling into how to make decisions, how to choose, how to find what's mine, and to keep doing that on a daily basis. Feels like it can add up to something free, something that's itself rather than a kind of spread out amalgam that doesn't feel like any of it's mine, which I know I definitely have the kind of orientation to life that I could end up like that with nothing of my own, but everything of everyone else's.
Which is why in hearing you and in reading Marcus, I really appreciate his language of independence. You said it really clearly that to be independent is not to be separate from or unaffected by the world around us, but it's to find that in ourselves that is ours, and to honour it. And we'll always be deeply connected with and affected by and affecting other people. So we're always interdependent. It's also true. Particularly, it must have been true in Marcus Aurelius's time in a way that is amplified now by the way social media works, that we humans have always been shaped by what we think other people are up to, and what we think other people think of what we're up to, and what we think of what we think, you know, that sort of hall of mirrors that we end up in.
Yeah.
And I was really moved, Lizzie, by your question, what is it like to be me? The honouring of that, and how vital it is to pay attention to it, and how little most of us ever got taught that. Like, I so remember this at school. At school, I think it's probably true of most people, if you go to a school in, you know, somewhere like where we are, we get taught that the way to be as a human is to know the right answers to facts, maybe know how to do some things. But we're never brought into the disciplines of paying attention to ourselves and paying attention to what's arising in our own experience and being curious about it, but also treating ourselves, like you said, with dignity. So even, this struck me when you were speaking, that even when we find ourselves in that state of envy and jealousy about other people's lives that spins us out from our own life, like, I've got to be like that person on Twitter, or that famous person, or if we don't notice, if I don't notice that what I'm in the middle of then is being envious and jealous, and how that's working out in my life, oh my goodness, I've spent the last 10 years living in jealousy of other people. Can I even see that so that I can see how that works out? Because I think usually it's easy just to go the other way, which is to go, something's wrong, I must fix it. And the way I'll fix it is by getting to be like those people. And in doing that, we're making this move of trying to get the answer to the outside problem that we've all been taught to do, and not really letting ourselves be present with what's here. And it's a subtle difference. And I appreciate that this is what you were saying, is that one way of understanding that might be to say, well, just feel what you're feeling and do whatever your feelings say, which I don't think this is. I feel jealous, so go and resolve the jealousy by getting the thing, you know. No. The bigger question is, what is this jealousy that's arising, and what role does it play in my life, and how do I dignify my own life by welcoming, by turning towards it and inquiring into it, and ideally having other people that we can talk to about it. Like, it's been such a thing for me with you, Lizzie, to be able to say that here's something that's going on in my life. I wonder what it is. Can we talk about it together? To wonder about our own experience, but to take it seriously enough, or to give it enough dignity.
Yeah.
That we can start to find something that can feel true to our own unique shape, that can have us meet with the world without continually trying to bend ourselves out of shape. And that's the thing that I think our education system has often produced. Like, nobody asked me, how do you feel about doing this maths? Like, it's just assumed that you just do maths. Actually, I loved maths, but nobody ever asked, what's this like for you? How can you understand what it's like to be in relation to this by paying attention to what it's like for you? And without that, this question about freedom and authorship that you're bringing up, without those disciplines of attention and the practices that go with them, and finding people who we can be in those practices of paying attention to ourselves, all we can do is to continue to try and fit ourselves into what's here, which is exactly what envy and jealousy are doing. It's like, I've got to keep on fitting myself into the world as it is, because if I can't, we never get the chance to write, to actively participate in writing the unique something that can only happen because there's only one life that is Lizzie Wynn's life, or Justin Wise's life. These lives will never ever happen again, and this particular set of experiences will never happen again. And I think that's what Marcus Aurelius is inviting us to take seriously, that there's actually some work to be done here that might take us quite in a different direction to what everybody else is saying, and what all of the, you know, what all the people who are posting on my post or liking or not liking what I have to say might take us in a completely different direction to what any of that says.
Yeah. Gosh, I'm just feeling the somehow linking this to all the ways that I resist the kind of creative path and how, I don't know, I'm feeling like there are structures and practices in our world that are really aimed at us not doing this. I can feel the strength of that in a very, it's not even that obvious. I mean, some things are quite obvious. You know, like I really do know the moment I stopped reading magazines, for example, because I recognized what it was doing to me in this way, where I was like, well, if that's the body that I should have and I've got this one, what the hell am I supposed to do about that? Because I'm never going to be able to live Photoshop myself in presence when I'm with other people. You know, there's certain things that are more obvious to me, like the way that the body image is portrayed in media and how to differentiate myself from that. But there's also the more kind of subtle realms of, like you mentioned, education, the way that this isn't a way that we're oriented towards life. It certainly in my education, I wasn't anyway. It was much more, you know, look at what everyone else is doing, being the motivation to do anything at all, which kind of left me with no motivation at all, quite honestly, which was like, well, okay, I've got the thing that I needed to get because everyone else got it, but what was the point in all of that? Like, it was kind of an empty experience for me. And of course I had fun and it was important that I was in a place and had friends and all those things, but the kind of the endeavor of education at the heart of it, if you like, which was what am I made for, that question wasn't answered in an ongoing way at all. So I didn't have any kind of ground to stand on when my education finished. I didn't have anything. And of course, it's a blessing in a way because it led me to all of this. But I also have the fantasy life, which, you know, might be another form of envy and jealousy in a way, but I think it also has intelligence to it, which is, what if I am made to be a potter? What if I am made to play with clay? Like, that kind of question never got to be answered because I didn't have that orienting inquiry around what am I made for. It was all, this is what we do. You know, you can choose between your languages or something. And that was about the only choice of it. And I'm not saying I would have wanted to have chosen exactly what I did, but I really would have benefited from some inquiry and some belief in that each self has some guiding impulses and orientation and interest in certain things and not others that can really be trusted. And I just feel like it's a whole nother inquiry to be in a life and also in a parenting journey as well, where you're not using what everyone else is doing as a motivating factor to do something, but you're allowing that there to be a trust in what each of our bodies draws us to, what each of our feelings draw us to, our thinking draws us to say that that's part of how we take the next step, and to keep on trusting that and keep on trusting that, what would that be like? So I think it's also really meaningful to be in this conversation because I think it's important for my life to be reoriented in this way all the time, again and again, because those structures that haven't had me do this since I was little, but have been more part of my life as an adult, if I'm not keeping on looking at this and keeping on looking at this, the more subtle forces have got their kind of grips in me, which mean that I avoid things that are good for me, that I don't take up the creative projects that I really want to take up and kind of talk about, but don't actually sit down in the spaciousness that's required to do them. And I can feel the vulnerability of admitting that too, because those things are really difficult when you haven't lived in that practice, you know, from little. So I feel really confronted by it and also enhopened by it simultaneously.
I was so struck when you talked about creativity and the creative path that creativity as a something to put our attention on and something to practice is so foundational here. I heard someone say this week that creativity is central to the spiritual path, which is really the path of living our lives fully, actually. Creativity, open-heartedness, and not skipping over our own experience. There was so much in what you were saying just now that reminded me that we're encouraged not to be that creative, to be creative only within very, very limited bounds.
Yeah.
And to jump over our own experience, so to jump over the grief, to jump over great joy, to not pay attention to any of these, to jump over our own jealousy, and to try to fit in, as opposed to paying deep attention to what's here, being really welcoming and open-hearted and curious about it, and what's here in other people too, and then bringing our creativity to it, which might take us who knows where. And when we really let our creativity go, when we're prepared to write what's true and make it available to others, when we're prepared to find out what it's like to sit behind a potter's wheel, Lizzie, and just see what does this feel like in my body, these are not disciplines that are taken seriously, and yet without them we join in the great big project of all saming ourselves, as opposed to unfolding the gifts that are here to bring. So I'm really touched and left from this conversation with creativity being central to this, and that's so inviting. Frightening, inviting, enlightening.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Justin.
So we're at that time where it's time for us to end. And I want to say thank you to you, Lizzie, and thank you to everyone. And I want to say to everyone who is listening to us in early March 2021, please keep your eyes out on our Instagram feed, in our Facebook group, anywhere else that you see us, for an announcement about a fun experiment we're going to do, opening the doors of Turning Towards Life to others, so we can step in together in a few weeks' time. So that will come soon. And as always, we, all being well, will be back same time next week.
Bye, everybody.
Everyone.